the most fun we have every year is the webcomics panel, because who knows what these guys are going to say as we try and get a serious answer out of even one of them about things. We only have one of the five people that are on the panel right now, so if the other panelists could take the stage, that'd be awesome. Hey, look!
Yeah, we've been before.
Hey!
Hello again?
Yeah, it is. Kind of doing this, like, boys and girls thing, huh?
You want to swap it up with boy-girl?
No, boys and girls and girls there. Panel we did at the library. It was like three or four girls and like one. It was like you
it was
and
Ryan.
Ryan was the boy. So that's webcomics. Generally, the girls have numbers of boys. Nice. So we're about to start this presentation, but we actually have sort of a special thing going on here. Not this. This is just broken. It turns out that one of our panelists won an award last night for the greatest kids graphic novel in Canada, and his name is Keen Su. Keen won the Joe Teacher Award for children's graphic novel, and now here from the awards is Kevin Boyd.
Well, I don't need a mic.
You don't need a mic? To present him with his award for kids graphic novel. Thank you, Kevin. The Joe Schuster Awards have a booth just behind here, coincidentally, right next to the Beguiling booth. So if anyone wants to pick up any webcomic, pass it along. Next, Keen is Faith Baron Hicks. Faith is probably best known for her two print graphic novels, Zombies Calling and The War at Ellesmere. Her third and fourth graphic novels are coming out in the next 12 to 16 months or so, and she's been working very hard on those, so we're excited about that. But Faith got her start doing an online serialized, This Is Your Start was on Ice, which was a serialized online comic.
No, it was Demonology
Online. Oh, it was Demonology Online.
10 years ago,
And now she's...
So old.
Are you almost finished Ice? I see you've been tearing through pages
done.
Lately. That's exciting.
I promise, it's almost done.
So this is Faith Erin Hicks, everybody. And last but not least, we have Emily Horn of The Softer World. She is one half of the duo that creates the wonderful and disturbing Price Weekly comics group. Yes, about the terrors that lurk in all of our minds. There's a great book of it. If you haven't read it, just pick any one of them, and you'll know exactly whether or not it's a script for you. So, ladies and gentlemen, Emily Horn. One more round of applause.
Sort of chose that, and it's a pretty easy way to tell stories, and it's, you know, pretty economical as well too. You can put it together pretty fast. As for Bottle of Awesome, I mean, that's how I make a living, so that's why I'm working on that.
Next, who has thoughts on why they publish online?
I use it mostly to feed my ego, mostly because I publish my comic Jollibee. It comes out once every year, and I actually finish the comic a year before that. So I'm actually sitting around waiting for 12 months, waiting for my book to actually come out in bookstores and to sort of go out and promote it and talk about it and all that stuff. And so in the meantime, I sort of need that immediate fix, the instant gratification of wanting to finish something and just put it out there. It's fast and it's quick and it's dirty, and I just really like that about webcomics, that you can, I mean, I still do occasional Jollibee short stories, I just go on the web, on my website, and it's, for
the
me,
the adoring
just,
comments just pour in.
Yeah, pretty much, but instant gratification.
Yeah. I know for myself, I just honestly never thought anyone would buy my comics, so I thought if I just give them away, then at least I get a chance for people to read them. Yeah, and then all of a sudden, here I am, and I have books for sale, and it's very strange, and I'm disturbed by it all.
Joey and I started A Softer World for print for zine fairs in Halifax in 2002. So when we switched to the web, it was just because a lot of our friends from Halifax had moved out of town, and we wanted them to be able to see it too. So I don't think I was really aware of there being a community of webcomics makers until probably we met Ryan like a few months into 2003 after we'd been putting it up for a while. And that's been one of the best things about it, is this community of people who are doing this either as a hobby or a side thing, or they're making their actual living that way. But yeah, we had no idea that was out there until like years into it. So it was kind of accidental.
And I did it because I thought that my comic it has pictures that don't change new words on top of that, and I thought no one would ever print that. Seriously, like, it's a really hard sell. It sounds terrible all the time, but it's not that bad.
It's I hear people like it. I'm mad. So here's something that's been brought up. You guys are all in some capacity earning a living. You're earning a living from your webcomic, and that happened for you maybe 4 or 5 years ago, Ryan? Or?
It happened when I graduated grad school. I either had to get a real job or do comics. Yeah, I decided to do comics.
And so that's paying your way. But I mean, I know that the three of you sort of in the center there are getting paying comics work now. And you all said that you sort of started off doing webcomics because you wanted to get your work out there. You wanted to get your work out there. Well, your work's getting out there now. And you're getting paid for doing it. Why still do webcomics then? Other than the immediate gratification of adoring
grace. There you go.
I think with what I do for Zuda for DC, I mean, their whole idea is their Zuda is like their DC's, you know, sort of movement towards the future. So they want it to be webcomics, and that's sort of like the same thing as print. I basically have the same deal doing a webcomic that I would do a print comic. So, I mean, it's pretty cool. I'm getting paid a page rate to put out pages every week, and yeah, there's not much to say about that, really. It's like just like a regular job.
Well, just to clarify, I'm not a complete. So then I'm not a complete egomaniac, but I started posting my Jellybee comic as a webcomic to start because I sort of felt that at the time no one was really interested. It's sort of the landscape of webcomics as it is still very strip based. People want to read a self-contained thing in about, you know, 30 seconds to a minute. You know, like so you get up in the morning and you read a certain your favorite webcomics. And for me, Jellybee was a long narrative, and I felt that that's not something that people would necessarily want to. It's sort of given out from the numbers of hits that I got. I would compare it with Ryan's numbers, and he would be getting whatever tens of thousands, and we would barely crack the 1,000 hit barrier. So for me, it was about finding a publisher was sort of the route to go to have me tell my story and to find make a way to make money off of it.
But I have a question for you.
Yes.
So because you're doing a long narrative, which is everything I do, everything's like this big long narrative, you find you write it separately than you would, let's say, in a graphic novel, where you realize it's a long narrative, but you are writing it in a style and in a way that it is slightly strip-based, so, you know, you always have your cliffhanger. You know, you always have something that's a little shorter, punchier, and people get a payoff, like, in every strip, even though it is part of a long narrative where you may have wanted some quieter scenes. Like if you're doing, like, print comics where people are going to look at 4 or 5 pages, you may start with a splash page of an open area that's an establishing shot and move slowly into action where you multiple panels, but in a web comic where they only see maybe 1-2 a week, that kind of doesn't always work, right?
Right.
So, that's
well. Well, yeah, I mean, it's sort of, for me, the answer would be no. I feel strongly about sort of taking the time to set the story up, and that's why I sort of feel like if I was making a more concerted effort to post up as a webcomic, I would probably be writing the each individual page as sort of in a strip-like format. But for me, there is absolutely no payoff in, like, one page in itself, necessarily.
I know Chris Hastings, who does a comic called Dr. Ninja, is a page-a-day long-form narrative, and he does have some puns at the bottom of each page for its joke, but if he doesn't, he'll put a joke in the title text and pull your mouse over the image. So that way you can do something where you can have this flow establishing shot stuff, but also have a joke for readers who want to look for it. And then you can either put that in the book when you print it or not, but it's sort of something you can do online that you couldn't do in print and get the best of both worlds that way.
Well, I also think, that I find that writing a strip versus writing a longer narrative, it's two completely different gears. I feel like you're working on two different muscles, and if you're trying to get the... Because I really find it really hard to write a strip comic. And like, 4 panels, like, the gag set, the punchline, that's, like, so hard for me. And so, trying to integrate the two would be, I think, my personal nightmare, because I don't think I could handle that sort of thing.
There's a comic that actually does that. It's Tintin. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but at the end of each page, something, there's a cliffhanger, or there's something like that. It's very interesting to read.
He's got a lot of panels per page. Sorry.
Yeah.
Compton 10 page. Hergé has a lot of panels on page, too.
But it's interesting how concise it comes together, because, you know, it is an overall narrative throughout the, I don't know, 60 or 70 pages of the book. But at the end of each page, it comes to a weird conclusion.
So he's sort of a master of comics
then. We worked with him for a while.
I want to go back to this. Why is ICE important to you now that you're doing your own long-form stories? like, do you just want to finish to finish it? Is there something after eyes? What's going on?
Oh God, it's the guilt. I had a girl come up to me just at my table today, you know, asking, when are you going to finish it? Oh my God, when are you going to finish it? And I just cried because, I don't know. I mean, I definitely think that I am committed to this story. I would like to finish it. Now that comics are my full-time job now, I just finished a book for First Second Books, and I got into doing comics full-time because of webcomics. Like Keen, I do long-form narrative comics. I feel that sometimes the web is fairly unfriendly towards that format. I just do them because that's what I like to do. It's, you know, it's something that I enjoy. I like doing, you know, the three-panel gag stuff as well, but the long-form narrative is where my heart is at. So I just, you know, out of the blue got this job from First Second because apparently they found their webcomics online and asked me to try out for a job. But it is my full-time job, it's hard to do the webcomics on the side because it's like, oh man, I spent 10 hours drawing this comic and now I have to go and spend the next couple hours drawing a webcomic. It's mostly just guilt.
Emily, you actually contribute to the narrative through pictures and the things that you choose to do. Do you have any interest in a longer form narrative, or do you guys love the three panel?
For those of you who don't know, A Softer World is a photo comic, and the photos are what I do. So I don't draw. High five, not drawing.
Lazy.
So lazy, you guys. Oh my God. Joe and I have talked about it a lot, but I don't know.
I didn't really mean you lazy.
One of the things about the way that I take photos is, unlike a lot of other photo webcomics, I don't pose people. We don't go in with an idea and say, okay, I need a person like leaning over a bird bath or whatever. I just take pictures in my life and put them together in a way that seems to suggest some kind of story to me, and then Joey fills in the really dirty, gross parts. So if we were to do something long form, I feel like I would have to be more deliberate about my choosing of photos, because we'd have to have characters reappear and all that sort of thing. So it would be a radically different way for us to work, let alone, like, Joey writes short stories and novels and things, so I don't think it's a problem for him to write a longer form thing, because he's done that, but for us, the two of us to get it together, that's working collaboratively is another big challenge to doing something like that.
So. Maybe you could just follow around one of your friends for like a week, thousands and thousands of photos. And then just letting a narrative come up from that as they start to get more and more annoyed and afraid.
That would fit Joey's writing style super well.
There you go. Actually, Ryan, you've got a slightly longer narrative in the Happy Dog story that he works on. How did you enjoy that?
That was great. For me, in terms of like a longer narrative, I sort of cheat because I have daily comics, and each of them can, in theory, stand alone, but you have the characters that develop, and you've got this, by now, incredibly convoluted continuity that I built up that I try to be consistent with these dinosaurs, which is fun. I've forgotten the thread of the question, but I was thinking, Emily, with the photo comics, the ones I've read that do the longer form stuff, it's really hard to play that for anything but like low, and high or low comedy, or people are posing for the photos and they have to throw their mouths open, and it looks very fake and unnatural.
Yeah.
And it's sort of hard to tell a story that's not, look how ridiculous this is.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen it done myself yet anyway.
I think it's time for our first round of audience questions, because we have a really big audience. You must have questions. So, anyone, anything for any of our panelists? I see friends pointing at other friends. No? All right, we got one. Go.
This is for Ryan.
Yeah.
I'm curious, where does the money come from for the website? How are you actually earning a living?
Ryan North, how are you earning a living?
Oh, it's easy. You put a website, and then you just connect your bank account to it. A lot of us sell shirts, so...
Is it really that easy?
But the idea is, if you're doing a comedy comic, it's helpful to sell shirts because you put a joke in a shirt, and if it's funny, people will buy it, and then that can make money. When I first started doing the comic, I calculated I need to sell 3 shirts a day to stay off the street. That's a great to buy a shirt. I'm totally smooth sailing. And it happened. I had like three people buying a shirt every day, which blew my mind for like 6 months. I couldn't believe that three people a day needed a shirt. But yeah, there's shirts. There's also advertising. You can do that. But the most people I know, most of their money comes from shirts or speaking engagements. I know the guy from PhD Comics goes on tours all the time talking about, he has a talk called The Power of Procrastination, I think, so he does the whole speaker circuit thing, but most of us just sell shirts or mugs or things like that. And it's kind of crazy because you're putting a comic up for free and no one has to buy anything, but you can still make a living with this, with people voluntarily buying a shirt. I haven't seen much success people trying to charge people for the comic. That tends not to work because you want to know if it's money before you pony up your 50 cents. And it's hard to tell that in advance.
I have a question for you on that, actually. We've been getting a lot of people coming at us with the iPhone stuff, like Comixology and Iverse and stuff like that. And they want to take your comic, basically, right, and sell you an app, and then sell you the comic on iPhone, which you can kind of just on iPhone go to anyway. So we're trying to understand this, like the group of Transmission X, and like, I mean, what do you think about that? Like, what's the point in that?
There is no Dennis or Comics iPhone app, because I've had a lot of people approach me saying, hey, you know, we'll do this, we'll cut you 50%. And I'm like, well, it's for free on the site, and I mean, I might get around to writing one myself and putting it up for free, but it feels kind of skeezy to charge people for the comic when they know they can get it for free,
yeah,
and
we're
not adding any value there.
I don't understand how it works.
Yeah, the subscription model, it doesn't seem to ever work with comics, because originally I started out on Modern Tales, which was a subscription site, and I don't know, eventually I just quit the site and moved it over to my own site, because I just didn't like the fact that, I don't know, I mean, I grew up reading online comics, I'm part of that generation, I want it to be free, I want it to be free to everyone. I've never made money off my webcomics, I'm not one of the beautiful people here. But I love doing the comics, and I don't know, I think that eventually I will find a way to make money off of it. Maybe through t-shirts.
It's kind of crazy because, I mean, we have books of comics, and I'm totally fine with selling a book.
Because you're selling something that you can hold in your hand.
Yeah,
this is the internet, which is...
It's weird.
So despite your participation in sort of the new online media, you still don't like the idea of charging for something that isn't physical?
I don't like the idea of charging something that if I bought it, I'd feel ripped off.
Okay. That's fair. Maybe a show of hands, I wanted to know whether or not we were going to go into the how to make webcomic stuff. How many of you are making comics or would like to make comics on the internet? Can I get a show of hands, please? And that's good. That's
only about, people.
That's only about a third. All right. How do you make comics online?
You need to come up with an idea. So I would say the first thing, and this is the same for writing anything. I think you need, what I do is I've got like an idea book, like a little black book that I keep in my back pocket, where I come up with really bad ideas for stuff. Like, you know, like I have an idea for a comic I'm going to do called Bananigans. Write about bananas that get into shenanigans. So, you know, if you were to, you know, and it's full of stuff like that. Like I have another one called Time Puncher, and he's this guy that punches into time and he goes places. Punch a clock or something. I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet, but literally I've got hundreds of these kind of ideas, and that's sort of where it begins, right? So I have it's like making a soup. So you got your really terrible title, right, like Bananigans, and then you think about, hey, what's going to be in this? Oh, a couple bananas, right? And then you think about, hey, I'm going to add stories about, let's say, me and my brother in there. So now the bananas are me and my brother, but with different names. You know, we always change the names, you know, see that at the end of the movie, you know, none of the names are the same. And you use sort of like some sort of weird, you know, spaced out idea mixed with real human things that have happened to you on a regular basis, and then you have to draw after that. Once you've got the story, kind of...
Not necessary.
Kind of in your head.
Don't listen to
it. Or you can take photos. Like,
I'm just saying banana clip art.
That's right, banana clip art.
Yeah,
that would work too.
So, sorry, you've all had really... That was sort of a facetious question. Thank you for your serious...
serious answer, though.
No,
you all had really different approaches to how you and why you put comics online. I mean, you just did it for as an experiment, right? It was just like, this is just, I'm gonna put this up to my friends and see if it works.
Yeah, basically, the labor stories of it was part of the class project.
Oh, there you go.
We had to do something interesting with the internet, and my group had done nothing after months, so I was like, screw you guys. So I took the DNS and pointed towards this comic I had just done that weekend.
Nice.
And ran with it. That's why it's called Quants.com. It was a made-up, meaningless name. I would have called it something better, but...
Dinosaur comics?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. There you go.
I'm not very imaginative.
And you started with an idea of doing a sort of a webcomics collective, almost. You and Hope Larson. Keen?
Yeah, I mean, we were at that time, it sort of got to that point where we were both looking for publishers, and Hope Larson, she didn't have a publisher at the time either, and she had actually just started working on this graphic novel, Salamander Dream, and she never, and so we decided, and we realized we had sort of the same story. It's about girls and their imaginary friends, and so we decided, oh, it's close enough that we could maybe collaborate and launch a very small collective, a two-person collective, and she got picked up by a publisher in the first week that she came out, and I toiled away for about another year, and I was like, oh, yeah, she's going off, she's got her new book published, she's publishing a second book now, and I'm still drawing, and actually it turned out that I ended up finding a publisher, because someone, I don't know if anyone here is familiar with the LiveJournal group Scans Daily, where they illegally scan... Someone had posted pages from my website without me knowing. I only actually found out about this year, like 5 years, 3 years after the fact. But someone had posted Jellybee pages to the Scans Daily page, and one of the people that read it, ended up being my editor for the actual finished book. So it's just one of those weird things where it's just out there, and people, the right person saw it, and found a publisher that way. So it's kind of a weird,
Would you guys recommend the way that you guys broke into doing comics in general, or comics online specifically, would you recommend that to the people in the audience?
Yes, absolutely.
You like yours of just put it up there and, you know, build it and they'll come?
Well, also, I think for myself, when I first started drawing comics, drawing was not something that really came naturally to me. I was very interested in the art form, but I just wasn't any good at it. So being forced, when I first started doing Demonology 101 back in, 1999, I'm so old. it's like 50 in webcomic years. I was really forced to draw every day and to draw comics, you know, which forces you to deal with perspective, with different characters, with characters interacting, with action scenes. So, you know, if you honestly want to do comics and you want to be a halfway decent artist, webcomics are great because, you know, they're forcing you to actually get in there and start messing around with things. And I think it's also sort of like proving your stripes to a publisher. I mean, I don't know. I'm sort of surprised when people come right out of the gate and they're like, yeah, I'm going to be a comic book artist and I'm going to get published and it's going to be awesome. But they've never done comics except... No, they just haven't done comics at all. I mean, the web is a great way to learn and to really experiment.
And when you say never done comics, you mean they might draw and illustrate stuff and come up with stories and stuff, but they've never actually sat down and done comics page.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just they have this dream, and, you know, it's like those guys in American Idol, they come in and, oh, I'd be a rock star, but they've never actually formed a band and just jammed or anything like that. I don't know anything about music. Apparently people jam.
Comics. Jamming, yes. Comics Jam in Toronto. It's the last Tuesday of every month at the Cameron House. If you just want to draw and meet other people that draw, Cameron House on Queen Street in some Bathursty area, just Edina. And they last Tuesday just show up and draw, and it's a fun time. So if you're looking to meet other creative people that do comics in the city, there you go. Comics Jam is awesome. You guys, at the end, are the only two... Actually, I guess, Andy, you've done a little bit of it as well in your professional work, that collaborate with other people to do your comics. Obviously, Emily, you work with Joey, and you've just finished your first graphic novel where you worked from another writer's script for the first time.
Yeah, for her second. It's going to be out next year.
Tell us about collaborating. Tell us about whether or not you think people should have, you know, a diehard creative vision for something, or if they should go in and maybe work with someone that plays to their... strengths.
It's horrible. Don't bother.
Don't collaborate.
Don't bother.
Right out.
No, I'm just kidding. It can be good.
writing wise can get interesting because as a comic book artist, you're telling the story visually, so you're writing sort of as well, right?
Yeah.
So working with a writer can be tricky, I find. Sometimes it works amazingly. Like I did some Friday the 13th stuff for DC, and the writer that I worked with was like the coolest guy ever. So I'd call him up and I'd be like, hey, what if we cut the girl's head off at the end? And he's like, yeah, do it. Just put it in a lake. And I was like, okay. Right on, that's going to be fun. So, I mean, sometimes it's easy, and then other times the guy is like, why isn't the stapler on page 4, panel 3, red next to the thing? Because it really makes, like, for the drama to be set up later, the stapler is very important. You know, there's stuff like that, and you're pulling your hair out. So, I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I have a colorist I'm working with right now that when he started, things were kind of, and I was always working on pages, and now the guy is, like, far better than I am. The guy can color, like, 8 times as fast, and his stuff looks so much better, and he just got back on vacation for 3 weeks, and I was pulling my hair out. I couldn't deal with it.
That's why your hair is short.
Yeah. It's gone. I pulled it out because of the colors.
What's it like working with Joey? Dish.
Doesn't everyone want to know?
Are you out of
batteries? Are you off?
I think I'm out of batteries, yeah.
All right.
He keeps on just quitting.
I'm sure everyone wants to know what it's like to work with Joey. It's weird because for most of the time that Soccer World has existed, he and I have lived on opposite sides of the country. For the last year, we've both lived here in Toronto, but we really developed the way that we work while we were in like 4 time zones apart and, working at vastly different, like I was working a day job the whole time. I was out in BC and he was sometimes he was a student. And so, even now that we live in the same city, we do most of our collaborative work over instant messaging, which is kind of lame. pretty lame. But it's the way that we developed to work things out, and so it seems to work okay now. But yeah, it can be really hard to collaborate, but I think it's actually super rewarding, and things come out of it that never would have come out of it if I wasn't collaborating with him, and I'd hope that the same is true for him. So
is that internet video with you and Joey working together, laughing together, and like slapping each other on the back, is that a lie? Is that all a lie?
It's all a lie.
Oh, man.
Because it would have been super boring for them to film me sitting at my computer at my desk and then go and film him. So yeah, it was pretty much a lie.
I've sometimes collaborated with Pastorine, where I'll write a comic 2 years ago and think this is terrible and just file it away. And then I'll revisit it 2 years later like, this was awesome, and I'll put it up and act like I wrote it that morning. Yeah. I like that collaboration.
You do steal things wholesale from Keen, too, occasionally.
If you hang around Ryan North long enough...
No, this is not
he's basically like someone waiting for you to say the wrong thing, or, you know, and he'll just pounce on it and turn it into a comic. And
this is untrue.
And so if you're his friend and you hang around long enough, you'll end up, whatever you say will end up verbatim in the comic.
That's exactly the same as Ramon Perez.
Yeah.
I've been writing that strip butternut squash for 2 years. He's taken everything out of my mouth and put it in either his mouth or Rob Kugler's mouth in the comic.
The only person I remember stealing from is my friend Pat, because he's good with puns. He invented this, it's in the comic like 5 times. He invented this, you take a pork chop and you eat the pork chop. And you have this bone with a bit of meat and gristle left on it. And you form a chocolate pork chop around that bone. He calls it a chocolate chop. And I just keep putting those in the comics so people will make them and take pictures of the chocolate chops, and that's all Pat.
That's awful.
Questions from the audience, part 2. All right. And we have Pat with a question for Ryan North. Pat? Why do you believe that Pat invented the Choco Chop?
Pat will deny he invented the Choco Chop just because he's shy and doesn't want to take the credit. But, Pat's amazing. He's got these weird things from his past that we always remember. He loves to cook fish. There's no reason for that. He just loves cooking fish. He's afraid of ghosts. He's great. You should all be friends with Pat.
Right there. Question. Derek.
Does the future of webcomics equal the death of print comics?
Does the future of webcomics equal the death of print comics?
Never.
Unanimous no?
Never.
I'm going to go with a yes, actually.
Yes, the answer is yes.
Waterworld, when we don't have paper?
We'll have water. Water comics.
Water comics. Seriously, let's get into piracy for a second. This is a contentious discussion. Have you guys found your own stuff stolen and available online in formats you did not intend it to be stolen and available online?
My comic zombies column was put on Scans Daily, but I thought that was awesome. But that's the thing. It wasn't like the whole comic was just put on this site for people to read. It was a good chunk. I mean, technically, I guess you could say it was piracy, but I encourage people to do that, and, you know, I think it's a good way to... No, I don't mean the whole freaking comic. You know, buy the damn comic. Don't be pirates. Dirty pirates. I'll shut up now.
Just from my perspective, I feel like I would have really made it if it's popular enough for people to want to just steal it. You know, I think that's, for me, that's sort of like, oh, that's pretty cool.
But you got the book deal out of piracy.
Yeah, exactly. So,
it works. It's sort of hard to pirate when you're giving it away for free. I know, but there's one character who hates it when he sees, like, torrents of his work. He's like, just view it on the website. But I've never seen that for Dinosaur Comics, but I wouldn't have a problem with it. It's the comics in a convenient package. Go for it. They're free there. They're also free inside. Go nuts. But, I mean, in terms of web versus print, I don't think there's any real conflict there. We put out books of print stuff. You can read print in the bathroom more conveniently than you can read stuff online. And there's no real... A lot of people move very fluidly between the two. Keen started as web, ended up in print. There's no real barrier between the two. So I don't see any conflict, any deaths on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, it's easier to read a comic book in the toilet. On the toilet. When you're on the toilet, it's easier to read a book than to have a laptop burning your lap, your bare lap, while you're trying to read comics. And, you know,
they get so hot.
They do.
Sorry, good question.
Isn't this a little bit like, you know how when television came along, this was the death of radio? And radio stuff.
Have you listened to the radio lately? It's awful. I rented a car this weekend. It's terrible. You got a satellite. There's one station.
But the point is, like,
radio is dead. Next question. Sorry, go ahead.
What I'm saying is, as a medium, it survived. Same thing with newspapers. Like, until recently.
Has the content survived?
Up until recently.
Are there radio dramas?
No.
There are.
I do like Matt Watts' radio dramas. I was just screwing with you.
In Britain, like, there's still radio dramas and all sorts of things on the BBC. And so there is, it survived, it's thrived in some places, I think.
Faith, are you saying that podcasts are the new radio dramas?
Oh, I wasn't.
Oh, okay.
Actually, you're absolutely right. Print comics are toast. We just want to make everyone feel good so that the print comic people still like us.
They do still have all the money for the parties.
I actually have a question. What do you guys think about floppies? Do you think floppies would go the way
they're toast?
No, I'm actually curious about this. Like, do you think the future is graphic novels and online, or do you think floppies will still be around 20, 30 years from now?
Well, if you think about it, like a print comic that might be in Diamond that isn't doing well, that may sell like 2,000-3,000 copies, you know, if you think about the amount of money they actually make in profit, they might as well just give it away for free and collect it and sell it in the bookstore, right? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you're only selling 2,000-3,000 copies and it costs like, you know, $1,200 to $3,000 to print those copies, I mean, it's worth it to probably just say forget it and put that money into the trade.
Well, I know for myself, I didn't read comics growing up. I didn't read floppies. I was terrified of them and terrified of the stores that carried them. Now, comic store is awesome. Go to the Guiding. Chris is awesome. but, you know, I grew up reading online comics and, you know, my brothers and my siblings as well. And now we read the graphic novels and the mangas, but the online stuff is where we get, I guess, our temporary content, which is that floppies? I mean, is it temporary content? Do people take it home and keep it?
Well, I mean, I think floppies, I've heard some stories of some cartoonists trying to do their first graphic novel, or the second graphic novel, actually, and it just spirals out of control because it's projects. They're doing 200 pages in the span of a year, and like it's just overwhelming. And I think actually having a, I've been thinking about this idea actually, like actually having floppies, you have 1 month to do 30 pages, and that is a hard fixed deadline. I think if you say, if you give someone to write and draw a 200 page graphic novel and do it, give it to me in 16 to 24 months, I think some people, I think some people aren't made for that kind of pressure.
Wouldn't the web help that though?
And the web, like, and
you could,
yeah,
you know, update it regularly and then offer it as a graphic novel in the future. I don't know. I'm curious. I'm curious to see what will happen with print in the future.
Hey, what happens when you guys miss a day?
Donates.
People hate it.
Nothing happens to us because we've never really solidly in stone said expect us on this day, this day, this day.
So, you guys,
so we'll put them up late, or we never put them up at the same time of day. It's all about low expectations.
I agree with that. Like, I mean, you're doing a free webcomic, and, you know, it doesn't pay the phone bill. So guess what? The work that pays my phone bill goes first. So if it's too much for the webcomic that week, I might have to, you know, but I'll post something saying, you know, it's going to come out on Monday instead of Friday.
Yeah, but Brian's webcomic pays his phone bill, and he updates every day except for when he takes vacations.
Well, I miss Fridays.
Did you miss Friday?
Sometimes I miss Friday. I try to do it less and less, but when you miss a day, I've never really gotten any emails. I just noticed the hits dip, and that's the disappointment.
Totally. That's the motivation. When you see those go down, you want to get them to come back up again. Yeah, so that's what keeps us honest.
How often do you guys actually keep an eye on the metrics, on like the hits?
I'm kind of obsessed.
Yeah.
It's really hard not to be.
Really?
It's so satisfying. You know, it's really nice to see, and sometimes, I don't know, we don't have comments on the site itself, so it's hard to know unless we go Googling our own names, which does happen, how people are reacting to it and how many people are reacting to it and what they think and whatever, unless you just go and look at the hard numbers and who's looking and that.
How often do you look up your own name?
I look up the software world regularly, but I don't really look up my name that often.
You're lying, aren't you?
Maybe a little.
I was going to say, I think you can easily spiral into madness by looking at your traffic too closely. And especially with things like Twitter, I know there's cartoonists who follow their Twitter follower count so closely. It's just a number that tells you how many people are reading your posts. And when it goes down, they post me like, what the hell, you guys? Like, what am I doing wrong? And it's a madness that you can embrace.
Do you guys actually read what people are writing about you? Do you like Google your own name to find out if people are trash talking you? Or?
I used to look up the phrase Brian North at Dinosaur Comics about once a week and see people. So there's always nice stuff. There's some rare. The worst thing I did in the past 4 years to a person was I won this award for best furry comic. And furries are like, you know, talking animals, furry. And this guy was super pissed because I have dinosaurs and those are scalies and not furries. And he had this like five paragraph diatribe like this is
this
part. Bullshit, they shouldn't have won this award, this is such crap, he's so angry. And I found this by looking at my name, so I just posted one sentence that was, sorry you don't like my awesome comic, dude. And I knew it would just set him off. And I rushed another, and then the code of this story is about 6 months later. He emailed me to apologize for the post. He's like, I had a lot of anger then, and I'm trying to apologize to people I made angry. And I was like, I'm sorry, I was a jerk there, making like snippy one-liners on your personal blogs. I looked up my own name. So we both apologized to each other, and life went forward.
I read my reviews. I mean, you know, why not? If they're good, it's great. If they're bad, I have something new to hate.
There is a certain point, though, where, like, if you get a bad one, no matter how many good ones you get, they don't make up for the bad one anymore.
And you gotta correct him.
It's good to... It's good to keep a certain distance from it sometimes because it can be... It can eat away at you unless you're careful.
But it's not even... I think there's a difference between reading a review, which is like, I put this out as my opinion of this book, and then there's where you look at your name or someone's like... Ryan North looks hot in this photo. And we find that and we're like, should I comment? Is it creepy? Is it probably really creepy? Stuff like that. There's a difference, I think, and one's healthy and one's not.
Yeah. question. We got lots of questions. Everyone's brave. Starting here.
Well, I mean, it's sort of the, I think it's the culture right now, like sort of the internet era where everyone's sort of the try before you buy mentality. And I think it's smart to just give stuff out for free. Like, I mean, there's a lot of talk of publishers giving out entire books for free and people buying those books later because, you know, they want something, they want that physical object again.
Well, especially when you're selling something like shirts where if you look at it in the most crass commercial way, the comic is an ad for the shirt. And then if they're pirating it, that's just more people looking. I mean, I don't think it's that basic, but...
What if they're pirating your shirt?
I had a guy who ripped off one of my shirts, and I just came with him saying, hey, what's the deal? And he was like, oh, I thought you'd never find this. Didn't even ask, he just said, what's the deal? And he was like, all right, I'm out.
Yeah, because that's the argument you hear from manga publishers, right? The torrent sites are taking away profit from them, and that's like copyright or taking, stealing your shirt, that they're hitting you where it hurts. So it's, you know, the comic itself is free, so it doesn't matter if that's pirated.
I don't know. Like, the difference between his shirt and my shirt is that I have this site with an audience that's willing to buy the shirt, and he's got a cafe press store that no one knows about. And there's a different sort of level there. And I guess if you're pirating or torrenting some manga, you have to know, you're not just typing in manga into a search, and if you are, you're looking for new stuff to read, and you might get onto one of these 10-volume series through that. I think there's an argument both sides for it. One side is always wrong.
Questions? Yes, you have a row.
If you're starting at square one in your career as a web cartoonist, you don't necessarily have that many connections. How did all of you go about promoting yourself?
The question is, if you are starting at square one as a web cartoonist, how do you go about promoting yourself so people do find your comic? Can he join Transmission X?
No. No, I'm just kidding. When I first came to Toronto, I knew before coming to Toronto, I lived in London, Ontario, and there's no opportunities for anything in London, Ontario when it comes to becoming a start-off illustrator, comic book artist, actor, singer, musician. Like, if you're outside of Toronto or any major hub and you want that as your career, you have to move to Toronto, Montreal, or BC, or New York. Like, you have to be in a major urban center. So my mission when I came here was to meet other people that did comics, like comic books. So I would have huge parties as often as I could and meet more and more comic people until I moved myself up the ring, like you could say sleeping your way to the top, until I was in the best studio that I thought was in the city. So basically I just made friends, and I know it sounds pretty shallow, but like they were great people and I became really awesome friends with them, and that was sort of the plan. And they taught me stuff and showed me stuff. Like Ramon is like, he does everything for me. I mean, built my way, you name it.
How good are your parties, dude?
Yeah, so how good are your parties? If you want to be in Transmission X, you better have some killer parties. It's like joining the Hell's Angels, right? If you want to join the Hell's Angels, you have to have the best party ever to get in. And if your party sucks, you're not getting in. You know, just trash your house and leave.
How did you, you're in Halifax, and you're part of the animation community in Halifax. Did that help you get into comics, or was it all just online? Was it word of mouth?
Yeah, I've never really done much in terms of promoting my stuff online, but that's probably why I've never been actually able to gain a huge readership. Like, at its height, I had a, you know, readership of maybe 3,000 or 4,000 people, which was pretty good for a webcomic that was only updated weekly and, you know, was a long-form webcomic, so it wasn't something that could be easily passed around the internet. I don't know, I just updated regularly, and I think there's a real lesson in that. I know it sounds simple, but update your comics. You know, constantly provide your readers with content, and they will come back, and they will tell other people about it. So I just basically gained what little success I had through word of mouth and through just being consistent, and throwing a few good parties.
I think
a wonderful evening. mean, when I first started out doing, I was doing this tiny little webcomic, it was like a journal comic, and I actually started posting to someone else's work that I liked, Drew Wayne, who was also doing another journal comic, and he had like a tiny little message board, and it was called the Failure Board, and there was literally maybe 30 or 40 people on that message board, and like there was almost no one there, and it was like you'd see the tumbleweeds sort of blowing through it, but we would like post our own comics there, and we would just talk back and forth, oh, this is kind of cool, and like just sort of finding like one or two people and just like saying, hey, I like your work, you know, this is what I do this too, but you know, it starts really small, and it just, it'll always,
I think it'll be in a virtual party.
Like most of the people that I worked with on the Flight Empire,